Snow does not care about high society. It doesn't care about dowries, titles, or ruined reputations. It just freezes whatever is left out in it. When Rowan, the Duke of Rothwell, found a woman shivering in a snowdrift outside an abandoned chapel, he expected a beggar. Instead, he found a bride. Not just any bride, the intended wife of the man he despised most in the world. He should have ridden past. But he stopped, and that choice changed everything. The wind howling across the moors of Yorkshire sounded like a dying animal. It was a brutal, indifferent sound. Rowan tightened the collar of his heavy wool coat, urging his gelding forward through the knee-deep drifts. He had no business being out in a blizzard. He was the Duke of Rothwell, a man who possessed enough coal and timber to keep his manor fires blazing until the next century. But one of his tenants' roofs had caved under the weight of the ice, and Rowan was not a man who left his people to the mercy of a broken world. He preferred practical problems. A collapsed roof could be fixed with timber, nails, and labor. Human nature was far messier, and he had learned long ago to avoid it. His route back to Rothwell Hall took him past the stone ruins of the old parish church. It was a bleak, hollowed-out structure that the local aristocracy sometimes used for intimate, atmospheric weddings. Today, it was nothing but a windbreak. Rowan almost didn't see her. She was a mound of white against a larger mound of white, huddled near the rusted iron gates. If his horse hadn't shied at the sudden flutter of frost-stiffened lace, Rowan would have trotted right past. He pulled back on the reins. The horse stamped, blowing plumes of steam from its nostrils. Rowan narrowed his eyes against the driving sleet. Lace. He dismounted, his boots crunching through the icy crust. He approached the shape slowly. It was a woman. She was curled into a tight ball, her arms wrapped around her knees, her head tucked down. She wore a dress made of ivory silk and delicate tulle. It was a garment meant for candlelight and champagne, not the jagged teeth of a Yorkshire winter. The fabric was plastered to her skin, stiff with frozen sleet. "Madam," Rowan said. His voice was swallowed by the wind. He crouched beside her. He reached out with a heavy, leather-gloved hand and touched her shoulder. She didn't flinch. She was rigid. Rowan swore under his breath. He grabbed her shoulder and pulled her backward. Her head lolled. He knew that face. Genevieve Winslow. Rowan stared at her, the wind biting at his own cheeks. Genevieve Winslow, the daughter of the deeply indebted Earl of Carlisle, and as of noon today, the bride of Lord Nathaniel Whitmore. Whitmore. The name tasted like ash in Rowan's mouth. Nathaniel Whitmore was a coward, dressed in expensive tailored suits. He was the man who had cheated Rowan's younger brother out of a fortune in a rigged shipping venture, leaving the boy to face debtor's prison, a fate his brother had avoided only by putting a pistol in his own mouth. Rowan had sworn to ruin Whitmore. He had spent the last 4 years quietly buying up Whitmore's debts, cornering his investments, squeezing the air out of his rival's lungs. This wedding to the Winslow girl was supposed to be Whitmore's salvation. Her family had an old title and a small, hidden reserve of unentailed land. It was a transaction. Blood for money. Yet here she was. The bride. Discarded in the snow. Rowan looked around. The carriage tracks had already filled with snow, but the deep grooves indicated a vehicle departing in a violent hurry. Whitmore had bolted, left her at the altar, or perhaps outside the doors. It didn't matter. He had left her to freeze. Genevieve's lips were tinted a terrifying shade of blue. Her skin was the color of skim milk. Her breathing was shallow, a barely perceptible rattling in her chest. Rowan's mind worked with cold precision. If he left her here, she would be dead in an hour. Whitmore would return to London, spin a lie about the bride failing to appear, and play the victim. If Rowan took her back to her family, the scandal would destroy the Winslows by morning. A jilted bride returned half dead in a storm. The vultures of the Tun would pick their bones clean. He looked at her face again. She had a strong jaw. Even half frozen, there was a stubborn set to her features. She didn't deserve this. No one deserved to be discarded like garbage. Rowan stripped off his heavy coat. He didn't hesitate. He wrapped the thick, coarse wool around her shivering frame, lifting her into his arms. She weighed nothing. Just hollow bones and ruined silk. He hauled her up toward his horse. The gelding sidestepped, nervous at the awkward burden. "Steady!" Rowan barked. He threw her across the saddle, climbed up behind her, and pulled her against his chest. The cold radiating from her body was shocking. Bleeding through his linen shirt, she was a block of ice. He spurred the horse forward. He didn't think about the social ramifications. He didn't think about the gossip. He only thought about the fire in his hearth and the profound, dark satisfaction he was going to take in making Nathaniel Whitmore pay for this. Rothwell Hall was a fortress of dark stone and heavy oak. When Rowan kicked the front doors open, carrying the unconscious bride in his arms, the silence of the grand foyer shattered. Mrs. Galloway, his housekeeper, rushed from the drawing room. She took one look at the frozen bundle of silk and wool, and the questions died on her lips. She was a woman who understood emergencies. "The blue guest chamber," Mrs. Galloway ordered a startled footman. "Light the fire, bring hot bricks, and fetch Dr. Finch, now!" Rowan carried Genevieve up the grand staircase. His own teeth were chattering now, his body reacting to the loss of his coat in the blizzard. He laid her on the heavy four-poster bed in the guest room. "Out, Your Grace," Mrs. Galloway said, her tone leaving no room for a duke's authority. "She needs to be stripped out of these wet things immediately, or the cold will stop her heart. We must warm her slowly." Rowan turned and walked out. He stood in the hallway, dripping melted snow onto the Persian runner. His hands were shaking. He wasn't sure if it was the cold or the adrenaline. He went to his study, poured a massive measure of Scottish whiskey, and drank it neat. It burned a path down his throat. He poured another. 2 hours passed. The storm outside worsened, battering the mullioned windows. Inside, the house moved with frantic, muffled purpose. Maids carried basins of warm water and stacks of thick blankets up the stairs. When Dr. Finch finally arrived, looking like a drowned rat himself, he spent an hour in the room. When he emerged, he found Rowan waiting in the corridor. "She will live," the doctor said wearily. "But it is a near thing. Her body temperature dropped dangerously low. She will likely run a fever for the next few days. The frostbite on her fingers and toes is mild, thankfully. She must have kept moving for a time before she collapsed." "And her mind?" Rowan asked. "She is delirious," the doctor replied, "muttering, crying out. It is a shock to the system, Your Grace. The physical trauma and whatever emotional trauma led to a bride being left at an abandoned church in a blizzard." The doctor looked at Rowan carefully, knowing better than to ask direct questions. "Thank you, doctor," Rowan said. "Mrs. Galloway will see you fed before you brave the road again." Rowan waited until the hallway was clear. Then he opened the heavy oak door and stepped into the guest chamber. The room was stiflingly hot. A massive fire roared in the hearth. Genevieve lay in the center of the bed, buried under layers of quilts. Her face was no longer blue. It was flushed an unnatural, feverish red. Her dark hair was spread across the pillow, still damp. Rowan pulled a high-backed chair to the side of the bed and sat down. For 2 days, he barely left the room. He didn't know why he stayed. He told himself it was to monitor his investment. She was the key to finally destroying Whitmore. But as he sat there in the quiet hours of the night, listening to her ragged breathing. The cynical excuse felt thin. He listened to her fever dreams. She didn't weep for Whitmore. She didn't cry out for her lost love. Instead, her delirium was filled with practical, terrified calculations. "The debts," she muttered, her head tossing on the pillow. "The creditors. The house in Mayfair. They will take the horses. Father, please. He promised to pay." She wasn't mourning a broken heart. She was mourning a broken contract. Whitmore had promised to save her family in exchange for her title and breeding, and he had reneged. On the morning of the third day, the fever broke. Rowan was reading a ledger by the window when the rustle of sheets made him look up. Genevieve's eyes were open. They were a sharp, startling grey. Clouded with confusion at first, they quickly focused. She looked at the heavy velvet curtains, the roaring fire, and finally, at him. She didn't scream. She didn't pull the covers up in a panic. She just stared at him. "You are Rowan St. James," she said. Her voice was a dry croak. It sounded like sandpaper. "I am," Rowan said, closing his ledger. He poured a glass of water from the pitcher on the table and brought it to her. She struggled to sit up. She was weak, her arms trembling as she pushed herself up against the headboard. She took the glass from him. Her fingers brushed his. They were warm now. She drank the water slowly, wincing as it went down her raw throat. She handed the glass back. "This is Rothwell Hall," she stated. "It is. How long?" "3 days." She closed her eyes. A shudder ran through her that had nothing to do with the cold. 3 days. In the rigid world of polite society, a woman missing for 3 days was a ruined woman. A bride missing for 3 days was a scandal that would be printed in the broadsheets by tomorrow. "He left me," she said quietly. Her voice was flat, devoid of emotion. It was the tone of someone stating a brutal mathematical fact. He received a letter from his solicitor just as the vicar arrived. He read it, turned pale, told me he had urgent business, got in his carriage and drove away. He took my coat by mistake. Rowan felt a cold spike of anger. Whitmore, always a coward. "My agents in London finally tightened the net," Rowan said, his voice equally flat. "Whitmore is bankrupt. The shipping lines he relied on went under a week ago. The news just reached him. He couldn't afford your father's debts anymore, so he fled. Likely to France." Genevieve opened her eyes and looked at him. She processed the information with frightening speed. She didn't ask how Rowan knew. Everyone knew the Duke of Rothwell hated Nathaniel Whitmore. "You ruined him," she said. "I did." She let out a dry, humorless laugh. "And in doing so, you ruined me. I pulled you out of a snowbank, Miss Winslow. You would be dead if I hadn't." "Dead," she whispered, looking at her hands. "Perhaps dead would be cleaner. The creditors will descend on my father's house by the end of the week. We will be turned out. And I am entirely disgraced." She looked up at him, her grey eyes flashing with sudden, defensive fire. "Why didn't you just leave me, or take me home?" "Taking you home would have meant facing the scandal immediately," Rowan said calmly. "And leaving you to die was not an option. I am a cynical man, Miss Winslow. But I am not a monster." "No," she said bitterly. "You are just an opportunist. You have your enemy's ruined bride in your spare bedroom. What a wonderful trophy. What an exquisite way to humiliate him further." Rowan leaned forward, resting his forearms on his knees. He looked at her intently. She was battered, exhausted, and terrified, yet she was fighting him. She wasn't asking for pity. She was demanding agency. "I don't deal in trophies, Miss Winslow," Rowan said softly. "I deal in solutions." By the fourth day, the storm had passed, leaving behind a blindingly bright, frozen world. The sunlight poured through the windows of the morning room, illuminating the dust motes dancing in the air. Genevieve sat by the fire, wrapped in a heavy wool shawl that belonged to Mrs. Galloway. She was holding a cup of tea. She hadn't tasted it. She was staring into the flames. She felt hollow. The panic had burned itself out during the fever, leaving behind a cold, hard ash. She was ruined. Her family was ruined. The life she had been raised to lead, the polite teas, the season in London, the strategic marriage, was gone. It had evaporated in the snow outside St. Jude's Chapel. She heard the heavy tread of boots on the hardwood floor. Rowan walked into the room. He was dressed for riding, in tall boots and a dark tailored coat that emphasized the broadness of his shoulders. He didn't look like the gentleman she was used to in London drawing rooms. He looked like a man who worked the earth, tough and unyielding. He took a seat opposite her, placing a stack of papers on the small table between them. "The roads are clear enough for a carriage," he said. "I can have you taken back to your father's estate in York by nightfall." Genevieve tightened her grip on the teacup. "To what end?" "The bailiffs are likely already there." "My father is a weak man, Your Grace. He relied entirely on Lord Whitmore's promises. Without them, he will collapse. I will return to a house of weeping and recriminations." "You cannot stay here indefinitely," Rowan pointed out. "The servants talk. The village talks. By next week, the rumor will reach London. They will say you ran off with me. They will say we conspired against Whitmore." "Let them say what they want," Genevieve snapped, a sudden surge of anger cutting through her lethargy. "They will shred my reputation regardless. If I go back, I am the pathetic, jilted bride. If I stay, I am the scandalous, fallen woman. The result is the same. I have no currency left in this world." Rowan watched her. He noted the set of her jaw, the way she didn't look away from him. She wasn't crumbling. She was assessing the battlefield. "You have one piece of currency left," Rowan said quietly. Genevieve frowned. "And what is that?" "Your hatred of Nathaniel Whitmore." She stared at him, taken aback. "Hatred is not a currency. It doesn't pay the butcher." "It does if you invest it properly," Rowan replied. He leaned back in his chair, folding his hands. "Let us speak plainly, Miss Winslow. We are both unsentimental people. You agreed to marry Whitmore to save your family. It was a business transaction. He broke the contract." "He abandoned me," she corrected, her voice tightening. "He left you to die," Rowan amended brutally. "He discarded you because you were no longer a convenient asset. He humiliated you. He humiliated your family." Genevieve swallowed hard, fighting the sudden sting of tears. She wouldn't cry in front of this man. "I am aware of my circumstances, Your Grace. You do not need to outline them." "I outline them because I want you to understand the alternative I am about to offer," Rowan said. He picked up the top piece of paper from the stack. It was heavy parchment, covered in dense legal script. "I want to destroy whatever is left of Nathaniel Whitmore," Rowan said, his voice dropping to a low, dangerous register. "I bankrupted him, yes. But he will scurry to the continent, find some wealthy widow and rebuild. He will spin a tale of how he was forced to flee, how the Winslow family deceived him. He will survive." Rowan paused, his dark eyes locking onto hers. "Unless we make him a laughing stock. Unless we take the one thing he paraded around as his prize and use it to permanently sever him from decent society." Genevieve's breath hitched. "What are you suggesting?" "Marry me." The words hung in the air, heavy and absurd. Genevieve let out a short, incredulous breath. "Marry you! You are mad!" "I am entirely rational," Rowan said smoothly. "Think about it. If you return home, you are ruined. If you marry me, you are the Duchess of Rothwell. Your father's debts will be paid by my solicitors before noon tomorrow. Your family's estate will be secure. You will have more wealth and standing than Whitmore could ever have offered you. And what do you get out of this? She demanded, suspicious. Men like the Duke of Rothwell did not hand out charity. Revenge, Rowan said simply. Absolute, undeniable revenge. Whitmore left you in the cold. I will take you, elevate you above him, and parade you through London. He will be known forever as the fool who threw away a duchess. His pride will be shattered, and no respectable family will ever do business with him again for fear of offending me. Genevieve stared at him. It was a cold, calculated proposition. There was no pretense of romance, no soft words about rescue or affection. It was a tactical alliance. You would bind yourself to a woman you do not know simply to spite an enemy? She asked. I know that you survived a winter storm that would have killed most men, Rowan said. I know that you woke up from a fever and immediately calculated your financial ruin instead of weeping over a broken heart. You are pragmatic, Miss Winslow. I need a wife who understands duty and practicality over sentiment. I need a duchess who will not flinch. I believe you are that woman. Genevieve looked down at her hands. The tips of her fingers were still raw and peeling from the frostbite. She thought of Whitmore, sitting in his warm carriage, driving away while she stood freezing by the iron gates. She thought of her father, pacing his study, waiting for the bailiffs. She had been raised to be a pawn, traded for debts, discarded when the debts were called in. Rowan St. James was offering her a place on the board. He wasn't offering love, but he was offering armor. He was offering a weapon. She looked up at him. The firelight reflected in her gray eyes, making them look like forged steel. My father's debts must be paid in full, Genevieve said, her voice steady. My younger sister must be provided a dowry, so she is never forced into a desperate match. Rowan's lips twitched in what might have been a ghost of a smile. Done, and I will not be a prisoner in this house, she added. If I am to be your duchess, I will be a partner in this charade. Not a prop. I would expect nothing less, Rowan agreed. He slid the parchment across the table, along with a silver fountain pen. The marriage settlements, drafted this morning. Read them. If they meet your approval, sign them. We leave for London tomorrow. We will be married by special license on Friday. Genevieve looked at the paper. It was the end of her life as she knew it, and the beginning of something entirely unknown. She reached out with her healing, aching fingers and picked up the pen. She didn't hesitate. She signed her name. The wedding was as cold as the blizzard that had brought them together. There was no crumbling parish church. There were no frost-stiffened lace veils or terrified brides. They stood in the damp, cavernous office of a high-ranking bishop in London, surrounded by dark oak panelling and the sharp smell of old paper. Genevieve wore a walking dress of dark, bruised plum. Rowan wore charcoal. They did not look at each other as they recited the vows. They spoke the sacred words with the clipped, efficient rhythm of merchants finalizing a shipping manifest. When the bishop pronounced them man and wife, Rowan did not kiss her. He simply nodded, signed the register with a heavy slash of ink, and held out his arm. Genevieve took it. Her fingers, still tender and wrapped in thin cotton gloves, rested lightly on his solid forearm. They stepped out into the damp soot of a London afternoon as the Duke and Duchess of Rothwell. The townhouse in Mayfair was a beast of white stone and wrought iron. It did not welcome visitors. It intimidated them. Inside, it was a machine that ran on silent, invisible labor. Footmen moved like shadows. Maids averted their eyes. The house was a reflection of its master, efficient, imposing, and devoid of warmth. Genevieve's new chambers were vast. The bed was draped in heavy crimson velvet. The carpets were thick enough to swallow her footsteps. She stood in the center of the room, listening to the muffled rumble of carriage wheels on the cobblestones outside. 2 days. It had taken 2 days for Rowan's solicitors to clear her father's debts. The Earl of Carlisle was solvent again. Her sister's dowry was secured in a trust that not even their father could touch. She had done it. She had bought her family's survival with her own life. She walked to the mirror above the dressing table. She looked pale. The fever had stripped the softness from her face, leaving behind sharp cheekbones and hollows under her eyes. She did not look like a blushing bride. She looked like a survivor. The door adjoining her room to Rowan's opened without a knock. Rowan walked in. He held a flat, rectangular box covered in worn black velvet. He did not apologize for the intrusion. Boundaries were an illusion in a marriage of this nature. "Tonight is the Earl of Standish's ball," Rowan said. He stopped a few feet behind her, their eyes meeting in the silvered glass of the mirror. "Everyone who is anyone will be there. The rumors have had 5 days to fester. By now, they will have decided that you threw yourself at me, or that I orchestrated your ruin to steal you." "Does it matter what they decided?" Genevieve asked quietly. "No, but how you face them matters." Rowan set the box on the dressing table. He flipped the brass latch. Inside, resting on faded silk, lay a collar of diamonds. They were not modern, delicate cuts. They were old stones, heavy and blunt, mined a century ago. They looked less like jewelry and more like a glittering shackle. "The Rothwell diamonds," Rowan said. "My mother hated them. Said they felt like a hangman's noose." Genevieve reached out and touched the largest stone. It was ice cold. "Why do you want me to wear them?" "Because society respects weight," Rowan answered. "They respect money, and they respect power. They want to see a ruined girl tonight. They want to see you lower your eyes and apologize for surviving. You will not give them that satisfaction. You will wear these stones. You will carry my title. You will walk into that ballroom, and you will make them feel small." Genevieve turned to face him. He was standing close. She could smell soap, starch, and the faint, bitter scent of the cheroots he smoked in his study. "I am not afraid of them, Your Grace," she said. "Rowan," he corrected softly, "if we are going to war together, you will call me Rowan." He stepped closer. He reached out, his large hands surprisingly gentle as he lifted the heavy diamond collar from the box. "Turn around." She obeyed. She felt the chill of the metal against her collarbone. Then she felt the brush of his knuckles against the nape of her neck as he fastened the heavy clasp. The contrast was startling, the freezing bite of the diamonds and the dry heat of his skin. A strange shiver ran down her spine. It wasn't fear. It was an awakening. "There," Rowan murmured, his breath stirring the hair near her ear. "Armor." Genevieve looked in the mirror again. The diamonds caught the candlelight, flashing like drawn blades at her throat. The hollow, exhausted girl was gone. The Duchess of Rothwell stared back. "Let us go then," she said. "Let them look." The Standish ballroom was a suffocating sea of silk, perfume, and whispered malice. 1,000 candles dripped wax from crystal chandeliers. The air was thick with the heat of bodies and the hum of 100 simultaneous conversations. When the majordomo struck his staff against the marble floor, the hum died. "His Grace! The Duke of Rothwell!" the man bellowed, his voice echoing up the sweeping staircase. "And Her Grace, the Duchess of Rothwell." The silence that followed was absolute. Rowan offered his arm. Genevieve took it. Her grip was tight. Not a desperate, clinging hold, but the firm grip of a soldier holding a shield. They descended the stairs. Genevieve kept her chin high. She did not look at the faces below. She looked straight ahead, her face a mask of bored indifference. The diamonds at her throat caught the chandelier light, throwing fractured rainbows across the marble walls. The crowd parted for them like water breaking around a stone. Rowan did not smile. He radiated a quiet, lethal energy. He was a large man, broad-shouldered and grim, and his reputation for destroying men financially hung about him like a dark cloak. Beside him, Genevieve was a pillar of white silk and ice. They reached the floor. The music, a strained waltz, started up again as the orchestra scrambled to cover the silence. "Breathe," Rowan murmured, so softly only she could hear. "I am breathing," she replied through immobile lips. "You are clenching your jaw. It makes you look defensive. Relax." She forced her jaw to unclench. "They are staring. Let them." Before they could reach the edge of the dance floor, the crowd shifted. A woman in emerald green stepped into their path. Lady Arbuthnot. She was a notorious gossip, a woman who wielded her tongue like a butcher's knife. "Your Grace," Lady Arbuthnot simpered, sinking into a curtsy that was entirely too deep to be sincere. She turned her predatory gaze to Genevieve. "And the new Duchess. Goodness. We were all quite shocked by the news. And the speed of it all. I must say, Genevieve, dear, you look remarkably recovered. Especially considering the harsh weather you endured last week." The implication was clear. She was calling Genevieve damaged goods. She was probing the wound, looking for blood. Genevieve felt a spike of panic, a ghost of the terror she had felt freezing in the snow. She opened her mouth to speak, to offer some polite, deflective lie. Rowan's hand tightened over hers, a silent command. "Hold the line!" Genevieve closed her mouth. She looked at Lady Arbuthnot. She let her gaze travel slowly from the hideous feathered turban on the woman's head, down the over-embellished bodice of her gown, to the hem of her skirts. She did it with the detached, clinical scrutiny of someone inspecting a lame horse. "Lady Arbuthnot," Genevieve said. Her voice was cool, level, and entirely devoid of warmth. The weather was indeed harsh, but I find the climate in London far more tedious. One must constantly navigate the draft. Lady Arbuthnot blinked, her smile faltering. "The draft, Your Grace?" "Yes," Genevieve said, stepping slightly closer. The endless, hollow noise of people who have nothing of value to say, but insist on saying it anyway. It is exhausting, don't you find? Someone in the crowd behind them choked back a laugh. Lady Arbuthnot's face turned an ugly shade of puce. She opened her mouth, but found no words. "If you will excuse us," Rowan interjected, his voice deep and smooth, carrying an unmistakable threat. "My wife promised me this dance." He didn't wait for a reply. He led Genevieve past the sputtering woman and straight onto the dance floor. He pulled her into his arms. The waltz was formal, but the way he held her was not. His hand rested firmly on the small of her back. He guided her through the steps with effortless strength. "That was brutal," Rowan said, looking down at her. "Did I overstep?" "No." A slow, genuine smile touched the corners of his mouth. It transformed his harsh face entirely, making him look suddenly, painfully handsome. "It was perfect. She will never dare speak to you like that again," Genevieve looked up at him. The adrenaline was pounding in her ears, but the fear was gone. She felt a sudden, fierce rush of triumph. She wasn't just surviving, she was fighting back, and he was right there with her. "You don't dance," she pointed out, realizing that he was moving with surprising grace. "I don't dance for pleasure," Rowan corrected. "I dance for strategy. Right now, I need half the men in this room to see that I possess something they cannot have. And I need the women to see that you are untouchable." He spun her, the heavy skirts of her gown flaring out. When she came back to him, they were chest to chest. For a split second, the strategy faded. Genevieve felt the hard, steady rhythm of his heart against her ribs. She looked into his dark eyes, and saw something flicker there, something that had nothing to do with revenge or social standing. It was hunger, raw and unguarded. The music ended. They stepped apart. The polite applause washed over them, but it sounded distant. The air between them had fundamentally shifted. The contract was signed in ink, but the reality of their marriage was suddenly written in blood and heat. 4 weeks passed. The season raged on, a glittering, exhausting carousel of dinners, theatre parties, and balls. Genevieve and Rowan moved through it as an impenetrable unit. The ton, ever fickle, soon grew bored of trying to crack their united front. The scandal of the jilted bride morphed into the legend of the Ice Duchess. Men respected Rowan's wealth. Women feared Genevieve's sharp tongue. They were a terrifying, successful partnership. It was exactly what they had planned, and it was tearing them apart. The townhouse in Mayfair was no longer a silent machine. It was a pressure cooker. The casual touches required for public consumption, a hand on the waist, a lingering glance across a dining table, had become a torment in private. When the doors of their separate chambers closed at night, the silence was deafening. Genevieve found herself listening for the creak of the floorboards in his room. Rowan found himself staring at the adjoining door, his glass of whiskey growing warm in his hand. They were two pragmatic people who had built a perfect trap, only to realize they were caught inside it. The breaking point arrived at the Duke of Devonshire's summer exhibition. It was a sprawling affair, held in a massive glass conservatory, filled with exotic orchids and imported ferns. The humidity was oppressive. Genevieve had stepped away from the crowd, seeking a moment of quiet near a towering display of purple vines. She was admiring a jagged, carnivorous-looking bloom when a voice behind her made her blood turn to ice. "You always did look stunning in white, Genevieve." She went perfectly still. The world seemed to tilt on its axis. She didn't need to turn around and know the voice. The slick, polished arrogance was unmistakable. "Nathaniel Whitmore," she turned slowly. He stood a few feet away, leaning casually against a stone pillar. He wore a masterfully tailored coat of navy blue. He looked prosperous. He looked entirely unaffected by the ruin he had caused. "Lord Whitmore," Genevieve said. Her voice didn't shake. The weeks of training with Rowan held firm. Whitmore pushed off the pillar and took a step toward her. He looked her up and down, a predatory smirk playing on his lips. "I must say, I didn't expect you to recover so quickly, or so profitably. Rothwell, of all people. How did you manage it? Did you weep and beg on his doorstep?" The sheer audacity of the man stole her breath for a fraction of a second. He had left her to freeze to death. He had run like a coward. And here he was, mocking her survival. "I managed it," Genevieve said, her voice dropping to a dangerous whisper, "by possessing the spine that you lack." Whitmore laughed, a sharp, ugly sound. "Oh, very brave. Very impressive. You are a duchess now, yes. But we both know the truth. You were my cast-off. Rothwell only took you because I discarded you. You are nothing but a pawn in his feud with me." He stepped closer, invading her space, trying to use his height to intimidate her. "He doesn't want you, Genevieve. He just wanted to beat me. When he grows bored of the game, you will be right back where I left you, cold and alone." Genevieve looked up at him. She didn't see the handsome lord who had charmed her father. She saw a weak, pathetic creature. "You are mistaken, Nathaniel," a deep voice rumbled through the humid air. Whitmore jumped, spinning around. Rowan stepped out from behind the wall of ferns. He didn't look angry. He looked entirely calm, which made him infinitely more terrifying. His eyes were fixed on Whitmore, dark and dead. Whitmore took a hasty step backward, bumping into the stone pillar. "Rothwell, we were just conversing." "You were speaking," Rowan corrected, taking a slow, measured step forward. My wife was simply tolerating the noise. Rowan moved to stand beside Genevieve. He didn't put his arm around her. He didn't need to. His mere presence was a physical barrier. I heard you were in Paris, Rowan said softly, scurrying around the gambling dens, looking for a gullible widow to fund your next disaster. Whitmore flushed, his hands clenching into fists. I'm rebuilding my estate. No thanks to your thievery, Rothwell. It isn't thievery when you hand me the keys because you are too stupid to read a ledger, Rowan replied. He tilted his head, studying Whitmore like an insect pinned to a board. I warned you once, Nathaniel. If you ever crossed my path again, I would finish the job. If you ever speak to my wife again, if you even look in her direction across a crowded room, I will not bankrupt you. I will dismantle you. I will buy the debts of everyone you know. I will make you a pariah so toxic that beggars will refuse your coin. Do you understand? Whitmore swallowed hard. The bluster was gone. He was looking at a man who held absolute power and possessed zero mercy. He gave a jerky, terrified nod. He turned and practically ran toward the exit of the conservatory. Silence fell over the small alcove, broken only by the drip of condensation from the glass roof. The adrenaline drained out of Genevieve, leaving her suddenly lightheaded. Her knees wobbled. Rowan moved instantly. He caught her by the waist before she could stumble, pulling her hard against his chest, his arm locked around her, rigid as iron. Are you all right? His voice was rough, the calm facade shattering completely. He looked down at her, his eyes wild, scanning her face. Did he touch you? No, she breathed. She grabbed the lapels of his coat, anchoring herself to his solid warmth. He just talked. Rowan's jaw clenched. I should have broken his neck. I should have killed him in the snow that day. Rowan, she said softly. He stopped talking. He was looking at her mouth. The distance between them was gone. The contract, the revenge, the society they were trying to manipulate. It all burned away in the humid, floral air. He didn't ask for permission. He bent his head, and his mouth crashed down on hers. It wasn't a polite kiss. It wasn't a performance for the ton. It was desperate, bruising, and furious. It was a claim. Genevieve didn't pull away. She made a soft sound in the back of her throat and pulled him closer, her hands knotting in his hair. She tasted the bitter tang of his anger and the deep, terrifying heat of his desire. She kissed him back with equal ferocity, pouring all the fear and triumph of the last month into the collision of their bodies. When they finally broke apart, they were both breathing hard. Rowan rested his forehead against hers. His chest heaved against her silk bodice. I don't care about the revenge anymore, Rowan whispered, his voice ragged. I don't care about Whitmore. I only care about you. Genevieve closed her eyes, a single tear slipping free to trace a hot path down her cheek. The ice had finally melted, and the fire underneath was going to consume them both. The carriage ride back to Mayfair was suffocating. The silence inside the velvet-lined cabin was no longer the calculated distance of two allies. It was a heavy, volatile thing. Genevieve stared out the window at the blurred, gas-lit streets of London, her lips still humming from the pressure of his mouth. Her chest felt uncomfortably tight. She had spent the last month building a fortress around herself, mortaring the bricks with pragmatism and spite. Rowan had just kicked the door in. He sat across from her, his long legs stretched out, taking up too much space. He was staring at his own gloved hands. He looked dangerous. He looked like a man who had just realized he was standing on a powder keg with a lit match. I apologize, Rowan said finally. His voice was a low rasp that barely rose above the clatter of the iron wheels on the cobblestones. Genevieve turned her head. She looked at him in the dim, shifting light. For what? For silencing a coward or for kissing your wife? Rowan's jaw tightened. for losing my temper, for breaking the parameters of our agreement. I promised you safety and agency, Genevieve. Grabbing you in a public conservatory was neither. It was a lapse in judgment. He was retreating. He was pulling the armor back on, retreating to the safety of ledgers and contracts. Genevieve felt a sudden, sharp flash of anger. Not at him, but at the absurdity of their situation. They had survived a winter storm and the vicious teeth of high society. They were not fragile creatures who needed to be protected from their own humanity. Judgment, Genevieve repeated. The carriage hit a rut, tossing her slightly. She didn't brace herself. She let the momentum carry her forward, sliding off her seat to kneel on the floorboards between his boots. Rowan stiffened, his hands dropping to grip the edge of the leather cushions. What are you doing? I am renegotiating the terms, she said quietly. She reached up and pulled the heavy leather gloves from his hands, throwing them onto the empty seat. His skin was warm. The knuckles were white. She pressed her palms flat against his, lacing her fingers through his. You did not break me in that conservatory, Rowan. You anchored me. When Whitmore spoke, I felt the cold again. I felt the ice outside that chapel. But when you touched me, she swallowed hard, forcing the words out. She had never been taught to speak of desire. Women of her class were taught to endure, to manage, to tolerate. When you touched me, the cold was gone. I don't want your apologies. I want the man who just threatened to dismantle a lord to protect his wife. Rowan looked down at her. His chest rose and fell in a sharp, ragged breath. The cynical, untouchable Duke of Rothwell looked utterly undone. Genevieve, he whispered, his voice cracking. I have spent 4 years fueled by nothing but hatred. It is a toxic, ugly thing. It burns hot, but it leaves nothing but ash. I do not know how to be gentle. I do not know how to be a husband in anything but name. I am not asking for gentle, she said. She leaned up, pressing her cheek against the rough wool of his coat, feeling the frantic, hammering rhythm of his heart against her ear. I am asking for you, all of you. The anger, the loyalty, the heat. We forged this marriage in ice. Let it burn. Rowan let out a sound that was half a groan, half a surrender. He slid off the seat, dropping to his knees on the floorboards in the cramped space. He framed her face with his large, calloused hands, his thumbs tracing the sharp line of her cheekbones. He kissed her again. There was no hesitation this time. The strategy was dead. The contract was null and void. There was only the desperate, bruising reality of two survivors recognizing each other in the dark. When the carriage finally rolled to a halt in front of the Mayfair townhouse, the footman opened the door to find the Duke and Duchess sitting on opposite sides of the cabin. But their breathing was shallow, their clothes were rumpled, and the air between them crackled with an electric, undeniable current. That night, the adjoining door between their chambers remained open. There were no words spoken in the dark. There was only the rustle of heavy silk falling to the floor, the slide of linen, and the profound, grounding weight of bodies pressing together. Genevieve learned the map of his scars, the jagged line on his shoulder from a hunting accident, the rough calluses on his hands from years of stubborn, manual labor on his estates. Rowan learned the fierce, demanding strength in her grip, the way she didn't just accept his touch, but challenged it, met it, owned it. It was a reclamation. Whitmore had tried to make her a victim. Rowan made her a victor. They woke tangled in the heavy crimson velvet, the grey light of a London morning filtering through the curtains. Rowan was already awake, lying on his back, his arm wrapped tightly around her waist, anchoring her to his side. Genevieve rested her chin on his chest, tracing the line of his collarbone with her finger. You are thinking, she murmured, feeling the tension vibrating through his muscles. I am calculating, Rowan corrected quietly. Calculating what? He turned his head, his dark eyes meeting hers. How quickly I can finish ruining Nathaniel Whitmore, so we can finally leave this city and go home. Home. He meant Yorkshire. He meant the bleak moors and the dark stone of Rothwell Hall. Genevieve felt a fierce, sudden ache in her chest. For the first time in her life, the word didn't sound like a prison. It sounded like a promise. Nathaniel Whitmore was a man composed entirely of debt and vanity. When Rowan took away his money, the vanity fractured. When Rowan threatened him at the Devonshire exhibition, the vanity shattered entirely, leaving behind the primal, ugly desperation of a cornered rat. Whitmore owed money to men who did not operate in drawing rooms. He owed men who operated in the shadowy, blood-stained alleys of Cheapside. Men who broke knees before they broke contracts. He needed £30,000 by the end of the month, or he would be pulled from the Thames in pieces. He knew Rowan St. James would never yield. The Duke was a wall of iron. But Whitmore thought he knew Genevieve. He remembered the quiet, obedient girl who had sat in her father's parlour, nodding agreeably to his boasts. He thought she was a weak link. He thought she could be broken. He chose a Tuesday afternoon. Rowan was at Parliament, debating a crucial tariff bill that would keep him occupied until evening. Genevieve had instructed the driver to take her to a modiste on Bond Street. She was inspecting a bolt of heavy winter velvet when she felt the hairs on the back of her neck stand up. She turned slowly. Whitmore stood by the door of the shop. He looked terrible. The tailored coat was the same, but the man inside it was fraying at the edges. His eyes were bloodshot, darting nervously around the room. He smelled of stale brandy and fear. The modiste, a shrewd woman who knew the faces of the aristocracy, took one look at the tension in the room and discreetly vanished into the back storeroom. Genevieve, Whitmore said. He stepped forward. His voice lacked its usual smooth polish. It was reedy and thin. Genevieve did not reach for her reticule. She did not look around for her footman, who was waiting by the carriage outside. She simply stood her ground, her hands folded calmly in front of her. Lord Whitmore, she said. Her voice was flat. You are violating the warning my husband gave you. You are a very foolish man. Your husband is not here. Whitmore sneered, though the tremor in his hands betrayed him. He reached into his coat pocket and pulled out a small, tied bundle of letters. I need £30,000, Genevieve, before Friday. And you are going to get it for me from Rothwell's accounts. Genevieve looked at the letters, then back to his face. She felt a profound, exhausting wave of pity. It was a pathetic sight. Or what? Or I take these to the broadsheets, Whitmore said, tapping the letters against his palm. They are forged, of course. But they are very good forgeries. They detail a sordid, passionate affair between you and Rothwell, predating our wedding. They suggest that you conspired with the Duke to humiliate me, to fake the abandonment at the church so you could run off with his money. Genevieve didn't blink. No one will believe that. They won't care if it's true, Whitmore shot back, his voice rising in panic. The Tun loves a scandal. They love a fallen woman. If these print, your reputation will be ashes. You will be a pariah. And Rothwell, his pride won't withstand the mockery of being called a cuckold or a conspirator. He will discard you. He only took you to spite me. If you become a liability, he will throw you to the wolves. He stepped closer, the smell of sour alcohol washing over her. £30,000, Genevieve. It's nothing to him. But it's your life. Bring it to the Black Swan Inn by Thursday night, or I burn your new life to the ground. Genevieve looked at him. She thought about the terrified girl freezing in the snow outside St. Jude's. She thought about the fever, the panic, the absolute certainty that her life was over. She looked at Whitmore and realized something profound. She was no longer afraid of the cold. She was the cold. She reached out and snatched the bundle of letters from his hand. Her movement was so fast, so precise, that Whitmore didn't even flinch before she had them. "Hey!" he barked, lunging forward. Genevieve stepped back, dropping the letters onto the floor. She lifted her boot and ground her heel down on the parchment, the hard leather scraping violently against the wood floor. "Print them," she said, her voice dropping to a terrifying, dead calm. Whitmore froze. "What? Take your forgeries to the printers. Shout it in the streets. Tell them I am a whore. Tell them I am a mastermind. Tell them whatever you want." Genevieve stepped closer to him, invading his space, just as he had done to her at the exhibition. But she wasn't bluffing. "Do you truly believe I care about the whispers of a society that watched me freeze and did nothing? Do you think the Duke of Rothwell, a man who bankrupts lords before breakfast, fears a piece of paper?" Whitmore stared at her, his mouth opening and closing soundlessly. The rat had hit a steel wall. "You thought you were threatening a frightened bride," Genevieve whispered, her grey eyes locked onto his, hard and merciless. "But that girl died in the snow, Nathaniel. You left her there. I am the Duchess of Rothwell, and you are going to rot." The shop door chimed loudly, violently swinging open, hitting the wall with a crack like a pistol shot. Rowan stood in the doorway. He was still in his parliamentary coat, his cravat slightly loosened. He was breathing hard, as if he had run all the way from Westminster. His footman had clearly sent word the moment Whitmore approached the shop. Rowan's eyes snapped from Genevieve to the letters crushed under her boot, and finally to Whitmore. The temperature in the room dropped 10 degrees. Rowan didn't yell. He didn't rush forward. He walked slowly, his heavy boots echoing like a death knell on the floorboards. Whitmore scrambled backward, tripping over a velvet stool and crashing to the floor. He scuttled backward like a crab until his back hit the counter. "I didn't touch her! I didn't touch her! I swear to God, Rothwell!" Rowan stopped 3 feet away. He looked down at the pathetic, whimpering man. The hatred that had fueled Rowan for 4 years flared up, hot and blinding. It would be so easy. A word to his solicitors, a bribe to a magistrate, a few men from the docks, he could erase Nathaniel Whitmore from the earth. It would be justice for his brother. It would be justice for Genevieve. He raised his hand. "Rowan." Genevieve's voice was quiet. "It wasn't a plea. It was a command." Rowan stopped. He turned his head slightly. She was standing tall, unhurt, unbroken. She wasn't looking at Whitmore. She was looking at him. "He is already dead, Rowan," she said softly. "The debt collectors will have him by Friday. Leave him to the wolves," he courted. "He is not worth your blood. He is not worth our time." Rowan looked back at Whitmore. The man was weeping openly now, a pathetic stream of apologies and excuses bubbling from his mouth. It was a repulsive sight. The grand enemy, the architect of his brother's ruin, was nothing but a hollow shell. The thirst for vengeance, which had been a dry, burning ache in Rowan's throat for years, suddenly vanished. It evaporated, leaving behind a profound, startling clarity. Genevieve was right. Killing Whitmore wouldn't bring his brother back. It would only tie Rowan to this miserable wretch forever. Rowan lowered his hand. "If you are not out of London by nightfall," Rowan said, his voice entirely devoid of emotion, "I will not kill you. I will let the men you owe find you. And I will pay them double to keep you alive as long as possible." Whitmore scrambled to his feet, slipping on the polished floor. He didn't look back. He bolted through the door, tearing out into the crowded street, running for his life. Silence descended on the shop. Rowan turned to Genevieve. He looked at the crushed letters on the floor. He looked at the fierce, unyielding set of her jaw. "He threatened you," Rowan said quietly. "He tried," Genevieve corrected. She stepped off the letters and walked toward him. "It did not work. I told you, Rowan, I do not need you to be my shield against the world. I am my own armor." Rowan let out a long, ragged breath. He reached out and pulled her into his arms, burying his face in the crook of her neck. He smelled the faint scent of lavender and the sharp, metallic tang of adrenaline. "I know," he whispered against her skin. "I know you are." The Tun expected an explosion. They expected the feud between the Duke of Rothwell and Lord Whitmore to end in a duel at dawn, a scandalous trial, or a bloody public ruination. Instead, nothing happened. Nathaniel Whitmore vanished into the belly of a cargo ship bound for the West Indies, fleeing his creditors in the dead of night. He was never seen in polite society again. He became a ghost, a cautionary tale whispered in gentlemen's clubs and gambling hells. Rowan did not pursue him. He didn't buy the ship's debt or send agents to hunt the man down. He simply let him go. It was a choice that baffled his peers and frustrated the gossips. The ruthless Duke of Rothwell had the throat of his enemy under his boot, and he simply stepped away. They didn't understand that the Duke had found something far more valuable than revenge. He had found peace. 2 weeks later, a heavy traveling carriage rolled up the long, winding drive of Rothwell Hall in Yorkshire. The bleak, brutal winter had finally broken. The snowdrifts had melted into rushing streams, and the jagged moors were softening with the first stubborn patches of green heather. Rowan stepped out of the carriage first. He didn't wait for the footman. He turned and offered his hand. Genevieve took it, stepping down onto the gravel courtyard. She took a deep breath. The air here was sharp, clean, and entirely devoid of the suffocating soot and gossip of London. It smelled like wet earth and possibility. Mrs. Galloway stood on the top step, flanked by the household staff. Her stern face broke into a rare, genuine smile as she curtsied. "Welcome home, your graces." "Thank you, Mrs. Galloway," Genevieve said warmly. "It is very good to be back." Rowan did not let go of her hand as they walked up the steps and into the grand foyer. The house was no longer a dark fortress. The heavy curtains were pulled back, allowing the pale spring sunlight to wash over the oak panelling. The fires and the hearths were bright and welcoming, rather than desperate and necessary. "I have papers to sign in the study," Rowan said, glancing at the stack of correspondence waiting on the silver salver. He looked at Genevieve, his thumb tracing circles on the back of her hand. "Will you join me? I find I have little interest in reviewing estate ledgers without my partner." Genevieve smiled. It was a true smile, one that reached her grey eyes and softened the sharp angles of her face. "I will join you shortly. There is something I must do first." Rowan nodded, bringing her knuckles to his lips for a brief, warm kiss before heading down the corridor toward his study. Genevieve turned and walked up the grand staircase. She didn't go to the master suite. She walked down the long hallway until she reached the blue guest chamber. She opened the door. The room was immaculate, dusted, and silent. The heavy four-poster bed was made with crisp linen. The hearth was cold. She stood in the doorway, remembering the terrifying heat of the fever, the smell of sickness, and the absolute certainty of her own ruin. She remembered waking up and seeing the dark, cynical man sitting in the chair by the window. She had been a pawn, discarded in the snow. He had been a predator, hunting for vengeance. They had used each other. They had forged a weapon out of a marriage of convenience to strike back at a world that had wronged them. But somewhere in the crossfire, the weapon had broken, and they had been left with nothing but each other. Genevieve walked over to the window and looked out at the rolling moors. The ruins of St. Jude's Chapel were visible in the distance, a grey smudge against the greening hills. She did not hate the chapel anymore. She did not fear the cold. She closed the door to the guest chamber. leaving the ghosts of the past behind in the quiet room. She walked down the hall, her steps light and purposeful, heading toward the study. She was going to help her husband manage an empire. She was going to build a life on her own terms. She was Genevieve St. James, the Duchess of Rothwell. She had been left in the cold to die, but she had chosen to burn instead, and she had taken the devil himself down into the fire with her. Sometimes the greatest revenge isn't destroying your enemies. It's building a beautiful life they can never touch. Rowan and Genevieve proved that survival is a weapon, but love is the ultimate victory. Their marriage of convenience forged in ice ended up burning down the very society that tried to ruin them. If you loved this deep, gritty tale of vengeance, resilience, and unexpected romance, drop a comment below telling me your favorite moment. Don't forget to hit that like button, share this video with your fellow historical fiction lovers, and subscribe to the channel for more epic stories. See you next time.